time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning, Bob.
This is the week in 2021 that Dick Portillo got a pretty good return on his investment, didn't he?
I'll say, not bad for a hot dog stand guy. Iconic Chicago restaurant group, Portillo's. We've all been to a Portillo's, I would think. It went public this week, 2021, Bob, on the NASDAQ, trading on the NASDAQ. Kind of incredible. That was a few years after Chicago founder Dick Portillo sold it for $1 billion. I think he stayed on, though, to help in the interim a bit. But again, not bad for a guy who started with a hot dog stand, built out of a trailer. He started in Villa Park in 1963 with no running water and then grew to be a publicly traded company. Just kind of, it's just an incredible local story. Dick Portillo said that a McDonald's CEO once told him, you know, if you really want to expand, you can't have this many offerings, you can't have this many ingredients, you got to really simplify the whole thing. And Dick Portillo said he never wanted to do that because he felt his customers came to his restaurants because they were different than fast food, even though he delivered it fast. His fast casual dining experience was so different. It was felt like home cooking. And the chocolate cake certainly helps, too. I don't know if you've ever had that, Bob.
The chocolate cake.
Mm-hmm. Big fan.
Mm-hmm.
Love that one. Love it. But anyway, so it's just kind of interesting to think about, you know, it was called the Doghouse back in the day, and that's why he called his memoir Out of the Doghouse, because he said when he finally sold it, his wife Sharon was not initially on board with using up all their life savings to start a hot dog stand. And here is Dick Portillo himself telling it.
When I first had the idea, I came home and I says, honey, how important? All she wanted was a white picket fence in the suburbs. That's all she wanted. Mm-hmm. And I was doing a lot of crazy jobs, a lot of backbreaking jobs and that. And I said, how important is that home with the white picket fence? And she says, really important. Why? And I says, because I'd like to take the money that we save, our life savings, and build a hot dog stand. I won't tell you what she said because I would like to keep this family friendly. But she went crying to her mother and said, you know what my husband wants to do? He wants to take our life savings and build a hot dog stand. Thank you, Josephine. She said, sit down. He wants to do something with his life. You back him up. And from that day on, she didn't complain about that anymore.
Now she's got the white picket, white picket fence around a mansion, and they're expanding.
Totally expanding, Bob. Still expanding all across the Midwest. They've been popular for years, but now they're moving into Arizona, across Florida, and places where Chicagoans live and have second homes as well. But they want to be nationwide, though, just like McDonald's. At some point by 2030 is the goal, I think I heard.
And now we have an animal story from way back in Chicago history.
You know, 1892, Bob, this week, you wouldn't have wanted to have been in the Old Town neighborhood because the first elephant ever to be held in captivity at Lincoln Park Zoo went on a rampage. She broke out of her enclosure and just charged up North Avenue. Her name was Duchess, an 8-year-old elephant who also broke down a tavern door. She broke windows and charged through gates and fences. She was, they got her somehow, I don't know how, hours later. But the interesting backstory about Duchess, that she was purchased from the James Bailey and P.T. Barnum. The circus was in town, and they offered her for $3,000 to the Lincoln Park Zoo, a princely sum at the time, but they bought her and some other exotic animals. And she went on to live another 32 years as a very loved animal at the zoo. When she died, her hide was presented to the Field Museum, where it still remains today. But like, despite her popularity, zoos really didn't know how to care for these kinds of, you know, their elephants are very complex, social animals, and over the years, not really kept in zoos all that much anymore. I think Lincoln Park Zoo last hosted an elephant 15 years ago in 2010. Duchess was did live a nice long life at the zoo, but again, kind of fell out of favor over the years to keep elephants.
Never heard that story. I'll have to go visit Duchess at the Field Museum.
Different shape and form, but yeah, for sure.
A lot of us around here still remember Dr. Lester Fisher, don't we?
legendary Dr. Lester Fisher, beloved zoo director at Lincoln Park Zoo and veterinarian as well. He stepped down at the helm this week in 1992. He had been there for nearly half a century, Bob. So loved locally, even loved by kids. Kids loved him so much that when they went to the zoo, if they spotted the famous Dr. Fisher, they'd run over to get his autograph and just loved him, you know. Mm-hmm. WGN, as you know, Bob, a big reason he became a household name. He made regular appearances on WGN, talking about conservation, educating generations about animal behavior, habitat preservation. He thought of zoo animals as ambassadors to help the public understand how to preserve things for the future. And as just a leader, he was a transformational figure as well. He stepped up animal care. He brought animal behavior experts and veterinarians on board. He reduced the zoo population. He felt it was too crowded, and he tried to create animal habitats that mimicked as much as you could their natural habitats. So the Gorilla House was originally named for him. We pulled a clip here I think you'll appreciate, Bob, and your listeners as well. Dr. Lester Fisher on WGN on location at the farm in the zoo with none other than Ray Rayner.
That's not the moo of a real cow. That's my moo. But those are real cows you're seeing. And good morning, Dr. Lester Fisher.
Ray, good morning. And I did notice that that first cow, which is a brown Swiss, did turn her head.
Do you think I set up some kind of a call or a
I don't know what you did, Ray, but whatever it is, you did something. Because that first cow down there that's looking right at our camera is a beautiful specimen of a sweet brown Swiss cow.
And her name is Eloise.
And the name, of course, comes from the part of the world that these cattle come from.
Love hearing Ray Rayner. Dr. Fisher was a regular with Ray, wasn't he?
For sure, he was. Interesting backstory, too, Bob. You know, he served in World War II in the Army, and as a veterinarian, he was assigned to take care of 5,000 passenger pigeons and also took care of General Patton's famous bulldog, Willie. So then he came to Chicago right after the war and you know, just really became a legend, just so loved, right? Mm-hmm. Lived to be 100 years old, just died a couple years ago, too.
100. And, of course, in zookeeper years, that's about 150. We'll get to more This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis momentarily.
WGN, the Cubs are on their way.
More of This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis now, and let's talk about an historic ceremonial first pitch at Wrigley Field.
This week, 1988, Bob, President Ronald Reagan came to Wrigley Field to throw out the ceremonial first pitch at the Cubs game. Now, it was an emotional full-circle moment for President Reagan, who, as you know, used to call Cubs games when he was a radio guy at WHO Radio in Des Moines, Iowa. Way before politics, way before acting, in the 1930s he was doing this, and back then you'd get updates via the telegraph. So he'd rip and read the game updates, and it just did it in such a way that listeners felt they were really at the game. They loved him. And it's kind of very hard to do if you think about it. You had no monitor. This is way before broadcast television. So you really had to create the game with just ripping copy off the telegraph. And he just, I mean, you could tell Reagan loved the game, and you could tell he loved the Cubs. So it didn't matter your politics way back this week, 1988, when he came to Wrigley Field, because the crowd was roaring, just warmly receiving President Reagan. And we pulled some great audio, Bob. I think you and your listeners will appreciate here. It is something, Harry Carey was in the booth at the time for the president's first pitch and visit to Wrigley.
Please welcome the President of the United States throwing out the ceremonial first pitch.
A great hand for the President of the United States.
What a moment this is in the history of Wrigley Field.
How about a moment for Mary Ellen Topp as she walks the President out to the pitching mound. Now let's watch his pitch. High and inside. Damon Berrio. How about the thrill for that 24-year-old rookie catcher catching a ball thrown by the President and getting his autograph?
I think he wants to throw another one. I don't think he was very happy with the location of that first one.
Hey, that one's much better.
Harry was Steve Stone. Yeah, Harry didn't try to say Ronald Reagan's name backwards. I'm surprised.
No, I knew that part, but he did call out the ball girl, of course, to Harry Carey style, and right. President Reagan took a mulligan, and I thought that was interesting. He's like, very, very cool that he did that. So cool, too, Bob, because then Ronald Reagan went back to his roots. He ran up to the broadcast booth, joining Harry Carey and Steve Stone, and almost tried to steal their job.
taking over the role of a play-by-play announcer, Ronald Reagan, at the mic.
Well, Harry, thank you very much. You know, in a few months, I'm going to be out of work, and I thought I might as well audition.
Well, I'm afraid that you got this job anytime you want it, Mr. President.
All right, here comes the pitch. And there goes a hard-hit ball out into right field and taken right off the grass for an out.
That's great. I wonder if Harry gave him a beer.
Can only imagine what that would have been like to be in the booth with all of that going on, all of that. But such a cool thing, such a cool moment to recall.
Now we go back to 1984 for a little David Schwimmer history.
84. Okay, let's go back then, Bob. This is way before he was the big star of the mega hit TV show Friends. Maybe not that far, but far enough that David Schwimmer had joined the cast of the improv troupe known as the No Fun Mud Piranhas Group at Northwestern University. He joined upperclassman Stephen Colbert, who was already part of this comedy group. And he'd later say that Stephen was the reason that he decided, you know what, I'm not going to do the improv and stand-up thing because he is so good at it, this Stephen Colbert, that so quick, and I couldn't keep up with him. But he loved comedy, and he loved acting, and he also kept in close contact with Colbert for many years. They were very, very close. Even in the years after they left NU, they were both theater majors there at the same time in the same comedy troupe, and then they both started waiting tables in Chicago at the same restaurant group. And here they are many years later recalling that time in Chicago. David Schwimmer was a guest on Stephen Colbert's late night show.
Did you do the young struggling actor things like wait tables when you got out?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we have that in common as well. We both worked at various restaurants in Chicago. Uh-huh. And I waited tables for about 7 years between Ed DeBevick's in Chicago.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I worked for the same guy. I worked at a place called Scoozy.
Yes, you
right
did.
Across town from
you
guys. Yeah.
I remember going in once or twice.
I remember when you came in because I do remember when you came in because I think you'd already done something in Hollywood or something like that, and I was really jealous. Because you're like, I'll never work, and Dave Schwimmer already has work.
I was wondering why. Yeah, I was wondering why there was my soup tasted just a little, little Colbert.
You can't prove anything. You can't prove anything. It was a very deep bowl, though.
A couple of Let Us Entertain You employees. How about that?
How about that? So cool to hear them reminiscing about it. For 7 years, he waited tables. How about that? Well, he had launched the Looking Glass Theater already, Bob, but, still trying to get his big break. So, kind of cool.
Anna, thank you. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Talk to you then, Bob.